Good morning, and welcome to day two of South by Southwest Interactive. I'm Kelly Krause. I handle all press and publicity for the Interactive Festival. Before we get started, I wanted to remind everyone tonight of our opening party. It's at 8 p.m. at the Palmer Event Center. We'll have shuttles going to and from the ACC all night, so rain or shine, we party. As a personal fan of Watch It Happens Live, Bravo's late-night interactive talk show, and the Emmy Award-winning Top Chef, I'm super excited to intro this morning's panelists and welcome you to their South by Southwest clubhouse. This season of Top Chef Texas not only showcased our local culinary talent, but also featured an old South by Southwest veteran app and a quickfire challenge, where fans of the show were asked to tweet surprise ingredients for the chefs to cook with. With the addition of Last Chance Kitchen, Bravo maximized the viewing experience. We were all super excited to see a hometown hero bring the title of Top Chef back home with him to Austin. Go, Paul! And we're even more excited to have the Bravo team share with us today how they're using transmedia to push their programming to the next level. We hope their panel is Mazel approved. Please join me in welcoming our panelists from Bravo.
Dave. Yeah, thank you.
Dave.
Wow.
Hey, everybody.
I hope you guys aren't expecting to get fed.
Oh, Tom.
Oh,
forgot to tell you.
Oh, I'm the cook.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for coming. Sorry about that theme music that was going on forever and ever. I got an angry tweet about that a second ago. I'm Andy Cohen. I want to introduce my colleagues up here. First, we have Dave Sirwaka. He is the VP of Current and Cross-Platform Productions at Bravo. He knows where all the Top Chef bodies are buried. He's been with Top Chef since before there was a Top Chef. Welcome, Dave Sirwaka.
Yeah, Dave!
Tom Colicchio. You know him. He is the head judge of Top Chef, among many other things. Executive producer on the show. We have Amy Vile. She is the VP of Emerging Media at Bravo TV. Last but not least, she is our digital media goddess at Bravo. She is Lisa Shaw. She's the EVP of digital media. And I am going to be taking questions via Twitter. So if you guys want to tweet me at Bravo Andy, put the hashtag South by Southwest by Bravo, okay? And we're going to be opening it up beyond Twitter questions for other questions a little bit later. And I think there are microphones somewhere in this room that I can't see, but you guys can. So we're here to talk about Last Chance Kitchen and transmedia and how that works on Bravo. Lisa, first of all, what is transmedia on Bravo? What does that mean?
Transmedia, for those of you who don't know what it is, it's storytelling across multiple platforms or using different media forms. And basically, the way Bravo came to transmedia was, I think, out of like many ideas, it sort of came out of desperation. And, you know, basically I was from the digital side and I would talk to Tom and Andy on the production side and say, like, you know, all we're getting are like the bonus extras, like the leftovers, and it's really meaningless. And we really need to make content that's meaningful and has an impact. And they kind of go, yeah, but, you know, really the best stuff has to go on the show. So so I kept on, we have these sort of long-term strategic planning meetings, and I just kept on saying it has to be, the content has to be integrated, and I didn't know what transmedia was. And then that night I went back and there was an article about Tim Kring and Fast Company, which defined what transmedia was. That's what I'm talking about. So that's how we sort of brought it full circle, and then it was a long road to get there, but that was 2 years ago.
So Dave, why Top Chef as the first partner for a big transmedia initiative?
Well, it was a flagship show for us. It was a marquee show.
Yeah.
And it was very, I think it was there was a very direct and simple way to tell that story across two platforms. There was an easy stake, identifiable stake. Someone gets back into the competition. So,
and how did the fans participate?
So there are a number of different things that we really created to encompass this whole experience. So there was the on-air competition that we knew that our fans were incredibly excited about. And so Last Chance Kitchen was the webisode series where the eliminated chefs would go to compete against each other for a chance to get back in the show. We knew that there was going to be a huge hook for that because fans always want to rally around. If their favorite got eliminated maybe a little too soon, they can come back in. We extended the fan favorite competition, which is during live voting, fans can go and vote for their favorite chef who wins $10,000. Always one of the most popular parts of live voting. We made that season long, so now fans really could rally around their favorite chefs throughout the entire season and then throughout the week, so not just during the night of the show, but every night. And the third part, which was really the most important for us, ended up being the social. So tying the talent together with the chef testants, with the fans, and a week-long conversation about the events of the show and just getting to know the chefs better as personalities was a huge, you know, a huge
success for us. So you jumped on board this thing. Why were you excited about being a part of Last Chance Kitchen?
Well, you know, I think it really addressed the conundrum that we have when we judge, that we only judge on the current or the food that's in front of us and on that episode. And so a chef could have a bad day, who's a good chef, and get eliminated. I think of Trey in his season. I think of Jen Carroll in All Stars. You know, several chefs that I think got had a bad day. Naisha in his current season, who just had a bad day. But that's how we judge. And so it gave that chef an opportunity to get back into the competition. I thought it just was a great way to address that issue, and it's one of the things that during the course of the season that a lot of the viewers, a lot of the emails that I get, tweets that I get, are usually asking that question, and so it was a way to answer that question.
Right, right. I just want to say Rebecca Keen tweeted and wanted to know where is the word of the night, the drinking word. So. I mean, if anyone has a cocktail, I'm just going to call it and say, let's just make it chef. And so if anybody up here says, chef, take a little swig of whatever you're sipping on. And on that note, let's take a look at what Last Chance Kitchen is. We have a little sizzle for you guys. So let's take a look at it. Oh, turn up the volume. JJ the DPH thinks Tom Colicchio is super sexy. That's funny. Oh, so this thing is just all playing without sound.
Yes.
That's funny.
A lot of audio problems, huh?
Okay. Well, before we play, you guys can sort that out. Let me keep asking questions. So basically, there's a competition going on while Top Chef is being shot, okay? So Dave, how did you keep it a secret from the chefs?
Drink.
Right?
Drink.
Yeah.
Well, chef.
Yes.
We usually, after the contestants are eliminated, they usually are sequestered anyway.
Yeah.
And that's just to keep, you know, who's still in the competition a secret from if people go back to their restaurants. It kind of reveals, like, hey, weren't you supposed to be away for 6 weeks?
Right.
So that was pretty easy. And this year in Texas, we were moving around, so it was actually a lot easier than if we were one city because we kept everyone in San Antonio, and then everyone went to Austin and to Dallas. So
when the chefs found out that they were competing, that the game was not over, and guess what? You have a chance to get back in it.
Well, they didn't know, though, until they actually got into the kitchen.
They walked into the kitchen.
They just got a note from me saying, you know, I want to see you in the kitchen.
Yeah.
That was it. And so they showed up thinking that I was going to say goodbye to them or something, and then all of a sudden they walked to the kitchen and they saw a chef standing there. And
because you love to have a big ego goodbye with the chefs after
it's a top chef tradition. The chef takes every eliminated contestant out to lunch.
Yeah. Tom's like, let's talk. Let's really go deep about that.
Yeah. They sit on a couch and we have a little chat. It's great.
Yeah, that top chef tradition. Okay, let's see if it maybe works now. Should we see if that is going to play?
For season 9 of Top Chef, Bravo dished up its biggest digital offering yet, Last Chance Kitchen, a redefined TV show with multi-dimensional experience and standard platforms, with the online results impacting the outcome of the online show. After a chef was eliminated at the end of each week's episode, fans were told to go to BravoTV.com to watch for the secret competition that the remaining chefs on the show weren't aware of.
It's not over just yet.
Two people compete head-to-head in the challenge. The winner of this challenge will compete against the next eliminated chef until there's one chef left standing. Your time starts now. But creating a compelling companion video series was only step one in our transmedia evolution.
We knew the key success was to use social media and social messaging to take the storytelling to the next level. If it doesn't spread, it's dead.
Every day, Twitter and Facebook engage fans.
Twitter Quickfire Challenge.
For the first time ever, the fans will be deciding what you chefs will be doing. And it's all live as the quickfire is taking place.
Do a hash for a hashtag challenge.
Oh, Jesus.
The final element of Transmedia was to take our popular fan favorite contest and put a gaming layer across it. Every time fans read blogs, watched webisodes, or voted during Top Chef, they tallied up more points. This gave fans the chance to crown their favorite chef testant with the title and a $10,000 prize. The fan with the most participation points also won a foodie tour of Texas. Throughout the season, chefs engaged their fans across multiple social media platforms to rally their support and votes for fan favorite. Last Chance Kitchen expanded Top Chef from a one-night-per-week show into an engaging, multi-dimensional, 7-day-a-week experience that fans can enjoy on all platforms.
Love it. Very good. By the way, I'm going to get back on track, but this is too good. Sassy429 wants to know, how drunk are the chefs at Judge's Table? How drunk are the judges at Judge's Table? Daddy has gin under the table.
Yeah, except this season I didn't.
You had a bad back.
Yeah.
You weren't mixing the pain meds with the... Yeah. Yes.
It all depends. Sometimes they're very drunk and sometimes not. I think it's apparent when they're drunk. There's a good 2, sometimes 3 hours between when the competition sort of ends, when they're done cooking, and when we actually set up the judge. And so they have a lot of downtime.
Right.
And I think we had a beer sponsor this year. So,
yeah, right. Yeah. Tequila, too.
Did we?
Yes.
Okay, well, there you
Don
go. But some of them actually, some of them don't drink at all. And so it all depends. Loosens them up a little bit.
Yeah.
We like it if they're drinking Quickfire Cabernet.
Yes, right? Quickfire Cabernet. Delicious. Okay, So, Amy, we got to talk about Bev, because this was a huge thing. So, for all of you who don't know, we have this side competition going on, Last Chance Kitchen, and Bev gets kicked off of Top Chef. She gets eliminated. Very controversial chef who a lot of the girls have been picking on for the whole season. She gets eliminated. She goes into Last Chance Kitchen, and she won how many weeks in a row, Tom?
She won 2.
She won the last two.
Naisha won 4 in a row.
Naisha won 4.
It looked like she was unstoppable, and then Bev came in.
Bev came in and won the whole damn thing. And what happened on Twitter? What was the response when this happened?
So one of the things is the Last Chance Kitchen episode was released just after the premiere episode on air. So fans that just saw Bev eliminated go and competes against Nyasha. Huge upset. Bev beats Nyasha. And the fans just went wild. We kind of looked at it, and it was our Kanye West moment, where immediately you started to see the fans react, and it started to go out across all the social networks that there was this huge upset. And a lot of fans were really passionate about Nyasha in the competition and were really rooting for her because she'd won for so many weeks. And there was that, oh my God, moment where Bev won.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I think there was this undercurrent that started to happen where fans were really rooting for Bev because they saw her get treated so, not harshly sometimes, but she struggled a lot in the competition.
Yeah.
And here she was coming from behind.
Speaking of upsets, a lot of people were upset with me.
Yes.
I got more hate mail for that.
They were upset with you that
because
she won Last Chance Kitchen?
No, a lot of people really, really were pulling for Nyasha.
Yes.
And
yeah.
So when she was eliminated, I got an earful.
Yeah. Well, you get an earful after every freaking elimination.
It doesn't matter.
It's like,
well, you know, I say if we have 16 contestants, 18 contestants, whatever it is, we get it wrong 17 times.
Right,
so,
right.
Yeah, it just happens.
Okay, so on the topic of Bev, we at Watch What Happens Live, we have hired Randall, the Honey Badger guy. He's our special correspondent. So basically, there's a Honey Badger in every Bravo show, basically, or more. So he's been kind of Honey Badgerizing some Bravo shows for Watch What Happens Live. And so this was his take on Bev, okay? So let's take a look at that. We'll see if we can rack it.
This is Bev, and she is one badass chef testin'. She don't give a look at Lindsay just bullying her. Bev don't care. Look, Sarah swoops in to bully her too. So what? Bev just keeps cooking. Then Padma says, oh, sorry, Bev. Go home. But Bev don't care. Bev wins Last Chance Kitchen. Oh my God, look at their faces. They're just so pissed Bev is back in the competition. Oh my gosh, she's smashing them going crazy. Then Bev has to ski. She's never even skied before. But you think she cares? She don't give a Now look, Sarah fell down. Ooh, did Bev trip her? Now Bev is shooting a gun? Holy shit! She cannot be defeated. Look how she just stabs that fish. Ew, that's so nasty! But then Padma says, oh, sorry, Bev. Go home again. But Bev still doesn't care. She will just keep cooking. Well, obviously she cares a little bit. She's crying. She only human.
Bev's only human. Okay, so Pamela Lund tweeted and wants to know, what kind of a lift did you guys see in engagement pre and post the transmedia campaign, Lisa?
I don't think you can really, you can't really compare. I can just give you the what happened this season. So basically, we'd never had a web series that actually had impact that people actually wanted to go before. And if truth be told, We didn't have a guarantee against it because I was a little bit worried. So I was hoping maybe we'd get about a million streams. That was like my optimistic thing. And we really designed the program so that everything drove to the video series. So in the end, we got 8 million plus streams across VOD, ES, you know, downloadables, web, mobile, etc. And it's the highest rated, most streamed series at NBCU ever. So we've had phenomenal results. And, it sort of...
At NBCU, how did... At NBC, at all of NBCU?
Yep.
More than The Office, the stuff
yep.
that... Wow.
And it's a much smaller audience,
yep.
So it's in terms of volume.
What's the percentage of TV viewers that actually watched Online Kitchen?
So towards the end, because it grew, 26% of the on-air watching show watched Last Chance Kitchen.
Wow. Right.
So, you know, for us, that's a big deal.
That's well, considering that a couple million people watched the show.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this is good. Justin Broder, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, said, what do you guys do next year when Last Chance Kitchen isn't a secret anymore? I guess that's something we're figuring out now, right, Dave? Yeah, we're figuring that out. We'll let you know. Justin, I'll tweet you.
In a way, I don't... I think what that'll do is, I think that'll encourage the chefs to take more of a risk because they know they have a second chance. And so you may actually see chefs kind of really putting it out there a little bit more. So it could they know at this point, if we're going to continue, they know it's happening, but I think it actually can work in our favor.
At Mai said, what is the tattoo on Amy's ankle? I love seeing an exec with ink. What do you got, Amy?
Of all the questions here.
Yeah, that's
it's,
right.
Basically, it's a lizard. It's the Hopi Indian design. It stands for perseverance and staying true to oneself. He's about 19 years old.
Aw, that's sweet. That's sweet. Okay, Claire Wyckoff, I mean that. Claire Wyckoff wants to know how much the producers weigh in on who gets kicked off, as it says they can in the end credits. I am so glad that you asked that question, because I've been there for every elimination. You obviously have. How much?
This is actually
Calicchio. Answer
this question, so you guys can. This is great.
We really don't.
We don't.
No.
By the way, try going up to Tom and Padma at 4 a.m. and saying, "Oh no, we didn't taste the food, but we want you to eliminate so and so," and then see how that goes.
Yeah, but you know what? Let's look at it this way too. During the when we're taping, we're not allowed to interact with the chefs at all. We are only interacting with them when they're on camera. So either when they're cooking, judges' table. That's it. So we don't know, the Mean Girls thing happening behind the scenes. We have no idea that's happening. Absolutely no idea. Nor do we care that it's happening. And so we're solely judging on the food that night, the food that's in front of us. That's it. So, and also, if you look at it, we have 6 cameras rolling 16 hours a day. We have no idea what the story's going to be. There's so many different things that are happening.
Right.
And so really, to try to actually pre-editing this thing, to sit there and say, this person should go, we have no idea who the personalities and what personalities are going to emerge. So it really doesn't make sense at all.
Okay. @RoyalFatal has the greatest idea. Can we bring back Dina to the Housewives of Jersey in Last Chance Housewife? Meet me in the lobby. We're going to figure this out. It's a really good idea.
All the ex-housewives in one transmedia show.
Right?
And then one of them gets back in the show.
How many ex-housewives are there?
A lot.
And which show would they get back into?
The one that they were on.
Oh, okay. So Lisa, the whole thing was sponsored by Toyota. Why only one sponsor?
Well, it had to only be one sponsor. Toyota has been a sponsor every single season of Top Chef, because you need to make all the elements drive to it. So the way we normally do sponsorships, because again we're desperate, we just like try to take money from whoever will take it, and then they have their own agenda. But I needed to drive all the agenda towards making Last Chance Kitchen a success. So all the elements drove. And we'd never had a sponsor who was that invested before. And it made all the difference, because we were able to really drive around Last Chance Kitchen. If they had just been the web series, we wouldn't have had, I don't think, the success. Because the loyalty, the fan favorite, was all around driving people to watch more video and drive all the other elements.
Well, one thing that I love about Top Chef is that the quality of the show is so great. And, you know, it's the only show to win the Emmy for Best Competitive Reality Show versus Amazing Race has won like 85 times.
And
then
times.
Top Chef won once, which is incredible. And the quality of Last Chance Kitchen was great. Dave, talk to me about that.
Yeah, I mean, we put a few bucks into it, for sure. If we do it again, we'll probably don't do that. But we shot it. What we wanted
numbers,
to do.
Based on these numbers, I may want more.
Maybe. Yeah, you can get more. But we wanted to just have this real feel of that everyone's left the kitchen, it's nighttime, it was more dimly lit, and these people sort of come back in and get to prove themselves one last time. And we wanted to make it look very beautiful and keep the production quality like the show. I'm not sure if that's... It was one extra layer. I'm not sure that we need that completely for it to be successful. I think all the stuff that, you know, Amy and Lisa did in terms of the engagement helped it. And then the stakes, once people got involved with really being invested in the contestants and Tom being the judge, are the things that really drive it. So that sheen was a bonus.
Yeah, I think that the neat thing about it was, because it was the first time we did it, there was no sort of tried and true way of doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody was very open to change. In fact, I remember when we brought the contestants in as the audience,
yeah,
which was kind of really worked, because then it got all the other, you know, the contestants that were eliminated involved, and they were cheering. And then at some point, I just decided to throw a question out to them to see what they thought. And it all just worked. And the great thing was everybody was really open to it, again, because it was new. And it was also... it takes, you know, a lot of time and work to shoot one of our episodes, but this was about a half an hour. So
right.
It was great.
Right.
It was a half an hour. There was no deliberation. It was just like, all right, this is what I think.
You just tried the dishes.
This is what Tom would like for every episode of Top Chef.
Yeah.
He just... You lose, you win.
You lose, you win. That's right. It.
Goodbye. Oh,
yeah.
Shooting Top Chef takes a long ass time.
Yeah.
That's a little behind the scenes tidbit.
There is.
Potato Pig.
That's a technical term.
That's a technical term.
Long ass time.
Potato Pig 911 wants to know if you read up on the Top Chef blogs. Do you read the Gawker live blogs, which say that Padma is really high all the time? Do you read the blogs? Do you read the blogs?
I do not read Gawker. I read the Bravo blogs, and she's not high all the time. She's been nursing the last 2 years, so she's not smoking these days. I'm not the CEO was before, but it just goes to show you that Gawker's not always right.
You mean she's very attractive?
Smoking hot, yes.
Right. She's still smoking hot. So, Amy, what did you learn along the way through this whole experience? What surprised you about what went down?
I think one was sort of the traction, honestly, of Last Chance Kitchen. Lisa talked about sort of what the expectations were going in, and to just see that really take off throughout the course of the season, see fans start to find it not just on the website, but then go to the mobile sites, find it on VOD, and those numbers just grew by, you know, double digits throughout the course of the season. So that was really exciting to see. You know, the second part was really the power of social, and that when the chef testants, or the chefs, anybody still drinking, were rallying for themselves, like Chris, who won fan favorite, he really used social to his advantage, where he had, you know, he didn't last as long in the competition. He had 3,000 followers, but he tweeted to them very actively, and he's the one who ended up with the most points and votes for a fan favorite. And I think that, you know, the other big thing was, it's hard when there's a lot of different things we had going on, but keep it simple. Like, make sure that you're really clear with the consumers, like, what's interesting about this? What's exciting about this? How do I get it? And not, you know, not overcomplicated.
Well, we play a little game on Watch What Happens Live called Plead the Fifth. And I thought maybe we should play it with Calicchio while we're down here. All right?
I think we should play with the audience.
Here we go. Tom Calicchio, I have three questions in my hand. You may plead the fifth to only one. Tom, who is the most irritating person on Twitter?
Most irritating person on Twitter?
Yes. Who have you had to unfollow because they were so freaking crapping up your timeline?
I actually unfollowed someone yesterday because she was... I made a comment about Rush Limbaugh recently. And it was, you know, just your basic, you know, maybe we should boycott him.
Yeah.
And maybe this is probably the only city in this state where this would work and get an applause. But this woman just got so nasty, you know. And so I actually tried to engage her for about 3 or 4 tweets, and then I had to stop and just blocked her. I don't even know what her name was. I completely forgot.
So she's the most irritating person on Twitter.
Yesterday.
I thought you were going to say like
all Republicans.
Yeah, right.
No, not all. No. Actually, you know, I actually like engaging and like actually having a conversation. You can try to sort of find common ground. That works. I actually tried that.
Okay. We're playing a game, so we have to keep the question.
You're asking me a question. I'm telling you. I don't know.
All right.
Anybody irritated.
Okay.
I don't know.
All right. Music's gone. Everything is off the rails. Okay. Okay. Question two. We're still playing. When was the last time?
Who was supposed to be the most? Who do you find the most irritating, Andy?
Let me think about it. I will answer that question. When was the last time you watched porn on the internet?
I'll tell you when the last time I watched porn was. And it wasn't on the internet. The first season... Now, hold on. This is a good story.
This
is all good. The first season of Top Chef, they put us in this hotel. We had no budget then. Not that we have much of a budget now. We had absolutely no budget. And they put us in this place called the Diva Hotel.
In San Francisco.
And I swear to God, I walked in, and this place was bad. It was really bad. I walked in, I unpacked, I turned on the TV, and there was porn on the TV.
All right.
I turned it off. I didn't watch it. I'm not a porn watcher.
30.
When was the last time you watched porn?
This morning? I don't know. I mean, I'm watching it right now on my iPad. What do you think I'm doing? Just trying to power through, Tom. Okay, last question. The boat is sinking. You only have one life vest. Paula Deen, Martha Stewart.
Who cares? I only have one?
Yeah.
They're both drowning. I'm keeping it.
Okay. Tom Colicchio did not plead the fifth. By the way, it's my recollection that we actually wound up changing hotels of the talent in San Francisco.
I actually booked myself in another hotel.
Okay, and Katie Lee Joel switched to the Four Seasons.
Katie Lee Joel was great. I asked her, the first time I met her, I said, Katie, what do you think of the hotel? She said, my husband's coming here next week. I don't think he'll stay here.
Right. Yes. Anyway.
And then we switched places.
Okay, so what do we think about the chances for Last Chance Kitchen next season?
We'll have to wait and see. It wouldn't be a surprise if we told you.
Right. What's the next big transmedia play?
Well, now that we've had success, of course, now I'm getting more ambitious. And, you know, we at Bravo love to climb another mountain and try a new thing. And, you know, and our users are fantastic. Our fans seem to sort of embrace whatever the latest thing, whatever we try. So we're going to try. We did a social game with Watch What Happens Live called Turtle Time as a stunt this spring with Tramona. And it was so successful, we decided to, I think the next step in transmedia is content co-creation by the fans. So we're going to, because Top Chef, Last Chance Kitchen, we really created it. So now we want to allow the fans. So on Real Housewives, starting with the season of New York, you will be able to go onto Facebook and BravoTV.com and play the Real Housewives social game. And you will
cannot wait.
And you'll see the events that happen in the show, wherever they do, and the activities they participate in, you will be able to enter their world and participate yourself. So look for that coming out in Real Housewives of New York this summer.
That's very cool. Where is this? There was a really good... this is funny. Riff Raffster tweeted, how large was Amy's team that monitored and responded at social media?
Yeah,
we do things small.
We do, and it certainly could have always been bigger, but it was not large.
We have one social media person. We have one person on staff who monitors it, and the entire transmedia team was, I don't know, 20, 25. I mean, that's including like the art designers and every person who did a piece of art. We're pretty lean and mean.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing to say, too, is that it wasn't just really the digital and emerging teams that pulled this together, but it really was a company-wide effort from production to press to the digital to marketing, that it was an incredible team effort. And, you know, first when, you know, the sort of spark of the idea, and you're like, oh, well, how hard could that be? Then you get into it. And, I mean, it was great. It was really exciting, but not as big as you might think for the team.
Krupalicious thinks Sirotka maybe needs his own show. Okay? She's quite beautiful, I might add. Mental Picture said, are sponsors, brands educated enough to get social transmedia?
Yes.
Yes?
I have to say, Toyota, for example, when we explained it to them, and, you know, they had never heard of, I'm not sure they'd ever heard of transmedia before, we're really open to it. And I think when you have an innovative brand and you have a track record of success, we kind of said, well, are you willing to sort of jump off the cliff and learn together? And they were totally open to it. And I find that repetitively when we're out in the marketplace with the right sponsorship and partners.
Clinched Fists wants to know how much of a challenge it is to maintain continuity between channels in transmedia.
What does that mean?
I don't know. Clinched Fish. Fist. Tell us what that means. Okay. I thought you would know.
I think what they mean is it hard to keep the on-air and push to the digital and back and forth? I think that's what they're saying.
Oh.
Which is, you know, which is, believe me, there's probably a bigger team figuring that out than there is.
Well, I have to say, looking, well, I will say, just in the planning of Last Chance Kitchen, I remember conversations with you where you were looking at this grid of when the episodes were happening and what the timing and the shooting schedule and when the person would come back into the competition. It's a very complicated little affair.
It is, yeah. I mean, it's not that hard. It just, you just have to look at a lot of numbers and it hurts your head. But yeah, no, I think it was, because the underlying idea is very simple. It's just a question of really tracking it. And Lisa, you know, had a, we just really tried to hone how we wanted to push. And, you know, by not announcing the winner actually in the finale of Last Chance Kitchen, which was unpopular by some, and have that person be revealed in the show. That was the pushback. And so that was the other critical.
The highest rated show of Top Chef and the highest rated, like, block was when they revealed who the Last Chance Kitchen winner was on air.
Which was in the first 10 minutes of, I think, the third episode before the finale.
Right. Yeah.
Lauren Preston wants to know what is really in Tom Colicchio's cup that he's drinking out of right
Coffee.
Now. Coffee.
Coffee.
Okay. How do you take it, Tom?
Black.
Black, okay. How was the quality of food in Last Chance Kitchen? Did the chefs take bigger chances? Did they take bigger swings?
For the most part, it was really good. I think, you know, for the chefs, because they get sort of thrown by the challenge sometimes. They get all wrapped up in what the actual challenge is, and sometimes it hamstrings them. But here there was really not much of a challenge. It was just a very small little thing, and they had to cook. I mean, you notice that I think the best food that we had all season, besides the finale, was the episode that we had Charlize on. And that was more of an idea of a challenge. That wasn't so much, there wasn't a physical part of it. And so I think the chefs do better when they get to interpret a sort of an idea as opposed to a physical challenge.
Amy, so I think it worked better. Oh, sorry. Yeah.
And so I think the food was also fast, so they didn't have, you know, a lot of time to do long braises and things like that, and they didn't have time to overthink it. And so it was kind of immediate, and for the most part, it was very good.
Amy Tennyson wants to know if Bravo stars are trained on how to blog and tweet.
Well, I would say not so much anymore, because most of the people who come know how to do it. But I have to say, in the beginning, 2 or 3 years ago, when we first, you know, we were the first network brand to combine Facebook and Twitter in a social feed in what is now commonly known as social TV. And so we, you know, just threw it out there. It was like transmedia. It was sort of a hallway conversation where Amy and I were talking with the head of marketing, Ellen, and sort of like, what if we put it on air and you did a second screen? And so we did it for the first time with Real Housewives of New York, and they weren't that familiar with Twitter. So we did have to sort of train them, our one social media person trained them. And then what I found was, you know, to get them to get active was the next issue. So what we decided to do was we put them all at the bottom with their number of followers. And things improved quite rapidly.
Is that true? Is that?
Yes.
That's so interesting. I didn't realize that was... Wow. Okay, Lisa Shaw,
These guys are from New Jersey. They've been told their whole life not to have conversations on the phone. So,
I know. You know, it's funny. I have a book coming out in the beginning of May, and I was going back thinking about early days of some shows, and I remembered that with The Housewives of Jersey, when we were casting that show, there were many, many conversations with the cast of that show about... they had so many questions, and they were different types of questions than we had heard before. And one of them was, has anyone been wiretapped as a result of... It's funny. The name of the book is called Most Talkative. Thanks, Dave. It comes out May 8th. I appreciate it. Available for pre-order on Amazon. You know what? She is our goddess of all emerging and digital media, and she is going to plead the fifth, Lisa Shaw.
I can't.
Lisa Shaw, I have three questions. You may plead the fifth to only one. Lisa, who is the most overrated tech company most overrated innovation?
Oh, my God. This is so awkward. And I'm not a TV star. Now, this is like, Oh my God, this is just, they're all our clients.
Well, then.
Okay, I'll plead the fifth.
There, very good. That is within your right. Lisa Shaw.
I do have someone in mind, but I would never say it.
Smart. Are YouTube and Netflix going to kill TV as we know it?
Absolutely not. TV's up on the upswing, and it's going to continue.
Yes!
Yes!
Lisa Shaw, do the Winklevoss brothers deserve the money?
Oh, my God. No, but I give them a lot of credit for persistence.
Give it up for Lisa Shaw. Another question. What metrics did Toyota set to deem the sponsorship successful? Was it a convo about engagement versus impressions and clicks?
Yeah, it's a combination of what they're doing, and we're actually performing our most ambitious research study ever for this and for them. So, you know, because I think there's so many interesting things to look at, too, and there's a lot of analytics that simply aren't available right now. So, you know, I think one of the things people are most interested in is what is the passage of a person from TV to online to mobile to VOD, and do people interact? And, you know, right now, you know, you can do primary research to just interview people, but, you know, Nielsen, for instance, doesn't cover that. So we're just going to have to do a combination, and basically we're using, I think, 8 different vendors to create a sort of funnel story of what happens. But I think analytics, particularly in the social media area, have a long way to go, and I can't wait for us to get there.
It sounds like if someone actually came up with a new Nielsen system, it actually would get a lot of traction.
Yeah.
Like the whole system, yeah.
Yes.
So someone out there. Someone do it.
Yeah.
Let's go.
Okay, My Melody tweeted and wants to know if I'm only choosing questions from people who have Twitter handles that sound like porn stars. No, My Melody. By the way, My Melody, that name sounds a little. Okay, let's open it up for some questions. I mean, you guys have been tweeting, but does anyone want to actually ask a question? And well, you do in the front, but I think, are there microphones going around anywhere? In the middle, there's a microphone back over here. So
just yell it out. We'll hear you.
Okay.
All right. My question is,
yeah,
what is the next city for Top Chef?
Can't say yet.
Why not?
Because that's funny. Because when the time is right, the time is right.
Actually, we don't know. Truth
close.
Be told, we don't know.
Close. Who else?
I'm My Melody.
Oh. She's not a porn star.
Muzzle.
And I just wanted to know, how much increase do the chefs see in their business after appearing on Top Chef?
Try to get into Uchiko tonight. All right. I think Rick Bayless, when he won Top Chef Masters, saw an increase. See, a lot of them, there may be chef de cuisines that own the restaurant, so it's hard to say. But Rick Bayless, who had a long history in Chicago, when he won Top Chef Masters, I think it was 200%.
How has your business changed since, you know, 9 seasons?
It's hard to say, but, you know, what's interesting, because I don't cook on the show, there is a large part of the audience out there who doesn't they don't even realize I actually have a restaurant.
Really?
I swear. It happens all the time. I'll get, you know, are you really a chef?
Well, let's get you cooking in season 10.
No.
Right?
But yeah, there's plenty of people in the restaurants that are there because of the show. Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, what else we got?
How you doing, guys?
Hey.
Awesome.
Sweet. My name is Michael Wang. I head up the innovation effort at Georgetown University. I had a quick question, a slight kind of tangential, not talking fully about food, and just curious, I see a lot of parallels with sort of even a cooking show or kind of with Bravo, with higher ed. You could think of the viewers as students, you can think of the chefs as the faculty, you can think of kind of, you know, what Lisa does would be probably our head of digital, you know. And I'm just curious, what is your advice to an institution such as Georgetown, sort of how to build out its digital presence, sort of how to manage it, how to facilitate collaboration across these different potential silos and kind of, I guess, innovate better. Does that make sense as a question?
Yeah. Lisa? Makes perfect sense to me.
I just have to say, I mean, I can only speak from our experience.
No, of course.
And I've been there for 7 years, Andy and Dave a bit longer. And it's really been a process where we really did in the beginning, and our head of production just, and some of our head of sales were like, what, you know, the phone? What is it? But I have to say, it's through a process of education. Those people who, even the people who were not necessarily that engaged in the beginning, have become, you know, really at the forefront. And these guys, he has a new job where he's helping us with cross-platform digital content. So I think it's just a matter of process, and you need to have an evangelist. So I consider part of my job going around educating, and basically, you could call it educated, you could call it like bossy bitch, whatever it is. You know, it's you just have to sort of drive in, and it really is possible. And, you know, obviously you need to see results. You need to see, you know, in those 7 years, the role of digital has really blossomed for television, and that there's that you can show in transmedia there's an advantage. You can make more money, more engagement, more growth. So once you can make the case, so ideally with Georgetown, you'll do the same.
Thank you.
Yep.
Hi, my name's Katie. I'm from Austin, and I love the Rush Limbaugh boycott comment, but how much does Bravo oversee, I guess, what people tweet? Like, the chefs, they have personal updates, but then they also have show updates. So how do you decipher?
We don't.
Or do you, I mean, you just let people tweet whatever they want? And they.
But they're, I think they're given certain show guidelines.
They know, I mean, they know, obviously the chefs know when they were eliminated. They know things that happen that they're not allowed to say because it hasn't happened yet on the show. Yeah.
Cool. Thanks.
This was the first season that actually during the season that some of the chefs actually contacted me through Twitter. I didn't answer them. I waited until after the season, but it was the first season that they actually reached out.
Right. Yeah. Yes.
Hi, I'm actually Potato Pig 911, and I have two questions. One was, how did Tom actually get from like Dallas to San Antonio and then Austin back to San Antonio for Last Chance Kitchen? Did he have to come go back and forth all the time?
No. Should we answer that?
Yeah.
Yeah. What we did is well.
They were shot all in a,
we gang shoot them, so it's, yeah. We shoot a bunch at one.
It was opportunistic, so. When
you were there, you shot.
You shoot them back to back.
I don't know. If
no, I mean, we have to. The people are sequestered once they get eliminated.
Right. Okay.
And they're kept separate from each other in hotel rooms. And then when we have a day where the kitchen is empty, we bring one person in, and then they compete, and then that person leaves, and then we take the other person out.
We compress the time a little bit.
You opportunistically, yeah. Right? You don't.
We compress the time.
Well,
a little bit.
We couldn't shoot. I mean, we wouldn't be able to shoot it every day after the episode.
Right.
It wouldn't.
Yeah.
But that. Yeah. I mean, we.
It's a good question. But so once we got back to San Antonio, that's when we did it.
And I have one more question. How did you guys respond to, you know, Heather getting death threats on Twitter? She ended up protecting her tweets after her elimination. How did you guys respond to that? Did you respond to it at all?
Yeah, we did. I mean, we take stuff like that very seriously.
Wasn't you who made the death threat? That was you who did that, right?
It wasn't me. It certainly wasn't me. Actually, Heather, I mean, it was terrible. We don't see that happen to any of our chefs. We know that some people have bad reactions when they see people behave a certain way on the show. But we take it very seriously. Luckily, she let us know, and then we took measures. We have measures within NBC security and things like that to sort of deal with the, you know, the threats like this, and to sort of give her a strategy to deal with it. It's happened before.
Marcel got hit with a bottle in the bar.
Yeah, I mean, like Marcel got hit with a bottle. Marcel
right.
is actually a really nice guy. I mean, and some jerk came up and decided they had a judgment about him because how they saw him on the show. And hit him in the head with a bottle in a casino in Vegas. So there's a lot of people out there who are not cool.
Crazy.
And so we make sure that, you know, our chefs are protected because they make a big sacrifice to be on the show and participate in the show. And they're our partners in making the show. We don't want to see anything happen to any of them except success.
Yeah.
Thank you. What do you got next?
Good afternoon. Hi, Bravo, Andy. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm Dr. Goddess, and I gave a presentation on the bombastic brilliance of Black Twitter yesterday. You missed it, and I'm really hurt.
Oh. Well, I mean, I am all for the bombastic brilliance of Black
I know
Twitter.
You are, so that was my question. I wanted to talk to you I wanted you to address, because I'm a reality TV snark, and I snark the Real Housewives of Atlanta all the time.
All right.
And so, A, I wanted to know, what do you think is the impact that, quote-unquote, Black Twitter has had on reality TV, and specifically Real Housewives of Atlanta?
That Black Twitter?
Yes.
Well, you know, the interesting thing is that the African-American audience is tremendously engaged on Twitter, and two shows that they responded to very highly on Sunday nights, Roble and Housewives of Atlanta. I mean, every week, you know, if you look at the top 10 trending topics on Twitter on Sunday nights, it's like, you know, Nene, Sheree, Roble, it's all happening. So I don't know the impact, but I know that it's happening.
Okay, so question number two.
I don't have that app. The Black. I don't have the Black Twitter app. How do you?
Oh yeah, I'll hook you up, Tom. Because
oh, I know
we,
you will.
I'll hook you up.
I know it.
So, would you consider even having like a, you know, one of our reality TV snark teams on Watch What Happens Live? If we can make it happen.
Well, you know, it's funny. I do want to do a show one night, and I will probably do it sometime after a finale of Chef or Housewives, where and I almost did it for, I think, the Jersey finale this year, where I have just great bloggers on or tweeters who are really passionate about the show and just have them as guests, and I will. But it's funny because Watch What Happens Live is driven by our conversation is driven by social media. So I feel like if they're not in the studio with me as guests, they're at least driving what a lot of the questions that I'm asking are. So in a sense, they're there already, but I would like them to be on, in the blue chairs. Okay. What? Thank you. Next.
Hi, Andy. My name is Josh.
I can't see, which is why I'm like...
Hi, I'm Josh. My wife sent me here to ask you a question from Florida.
Okay.
And she told me I had to tape it, so I'm sorry.
Oh, my God, you're going to tape
it? It's very embarrassing. It's very embarrassing. Do you mind if I approach a little closer so I can tape you? Would you mind? Okay, the question is,
First of all, what's your wife's name?
Her name's Jenna.
Jenna, I love you.
Her question is, which housewife do you find the most interesting and why?
Here's the deal, Jenna. I get that question a lot, and I cannot... Look, I find them all interesting in different ways, and that is the damn truth. And the other damn truth is, if there's a moment in my day where I'm finding one more interesting in another, that would be a moment where I'm going to keep my mouth shut, because then I'm going to have 32 housewives with torches at my front door saying, you're an ass.
I think you just played the fifth.
I did plead the fifth.
Thank you. Thank you, Eddie.
Thank you, Gemma. Jenna.
Hi there.
Thank you, the music. Thanks.
My name is Amit, and I was wondering, with all the efforts with transmedia, if you guys were trying to attract a different demographic to the show, or if you saw any changes in the demographic after you guys have implemented the changes.
Trying to expand the audience to be even bigger, and I think the opportunity for transmedia... particularly with that Real Housewives social game, I think more so than the Top Chef thing, is that we're going to bring in new audience. Do you know what I mean? So by really building the social, and we didn't get into the details of the social campaign, but it was, you know, on 12 different levels, different feeds, little, you know, mole feeds and, you know, tweet battles going on all the time, really to drive. So once you can drive the conversation, you can try to drive the, you know, grow the audience. And in terms of demographic, the digital audience tends to skew a little younger than our on-air audience. Great. So, you know, that's natural, probably. So, yes, absolutely. We hope to bring in more and bigger audiences forever.
Okay. And then also, as a University of Texas graduate, I was wondering if you guys could all do the hook'em and if I could take a picture. Is that possible?
Like, if you could get a picture of us, I'll do it.
I don't know.
The hook'em, like for words. UT, it's we're a Longhorn, so if you just go like that.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Liza.
Hi, I'm Liza.
Hey, Liza.
Hi.
I totally agree with it, but I was just curious what went into the decision to lose Katie Lee Joel after one season and switch to Padma.
You know,
she went on tour. I think part of it was that she went on tour. Billy was on tour and through Europe.
I think that it was, you know, we got a question here also from that I was saving. From Liz says about, can you guys speak to how Bravo uses social engagement to inspire programming decisions? And I think part of it was, you know, we were finding the way of, you know, the fit for the show. And I don't think that it was a total connection. And I think the funny thing now is that Katie, it was her first job on camera. She was a great host,
right.
And it was her first job on camera, and I think that the audience felt, what we heard from the audience was that they felt like this is not someone that they knew had a connection to the culinary world. And what's so funny now is she's written several best-selling cookbooks. She's a correspondent on the CBS Morning Show. She's everywhere cooking. We could do a cooking show around Katie Lee Joel now, and it would probably be a big hit, and everyone would say, oh, my God, I get it. You know, I think at that moment, you know, she was surrounded by a lot, you know, Tom and Gail and people who were known commodities in the world of cooking, and I think that was something that we heard from viewers didn't really connect from her. I think another side note is that at the moment is she was fairly young. It was the first hosting 24. Job that she had done. She was 24 at the time, and we really also she's the sweetest. She's so nice. She's got the biggest smile. We also produced her to be a little probably sterner than she really is. She's very a bullion person, and we produced her to be a little more what would the word be?
Just a little strict, a little stern.
Just a little tougher. Yeah,
also, I think part of it, I'm working with her, she's from West Virginia, and she has an accent. For some reason, I don't think anybody from Bravo told her to lose the accent, but someone told her that she should probably try to lose the accent. And I think she was so self-conscious about it and really came across. And I think after, if you look at the season, I think when she came back, because there's a good 4 or 5 months break between when we shoot the season and we shoot the finale. When she came back into the finale, she was much better.
And by the way, she was on Top Chef All-Stars. I mean, we love her. She was on, she was a guest judge, and we talk about having her back all the time. We love her.
I mean, I enjoyed working. But also, I mean, Padma was also the first choice for season one, and then she got cast, right?
Yeah, she did. She wound up doing a mini series, which I've yet to see. Have you, Dave?
I saw it. Yeah.
Oh, you did?
It was like Mistress of Spices, I believe it was called. a movie in the. It was a feature film.
I think I dirty danced with Katie Lee Joel on Oscar night. Now that I'm.
I saw that. I was there and I saw
anyway,
that. It wasn't pretty.
Yes. Thank you.
Hi. I'm NYC Bacon. And my question is, how do I get an invite to sit at Restaurant Wars?
Wow, that's a tough invite to get. Dave, how's he going to do that?
Tom, come on, from New York.
Well,
How do we do that?
It's basically, for the confidentiality reasons, it's usually just friends and clients and some, you know, friends of the show, so that often it's like when we do it.
I'm a friend of the show.
Yeah, no, when we did it, we did Restaurant Wars right here in Austin, and it's usually a bunch of the people that have already sort of worked with us on the show, you know, people who help us out, and maybe you can work on the show, and then you're in every year.
Lord. Tweet Dave.
Wow.
Okay, thank you.
Tweet Dave.
I think we have time for one more question.
And it is the best question. My name is Leslie Sarkeesian. I'm from Chicago, but I've been here in Austin for 13 years. Woo-hoo. And actually, it is a relief for me to be able to ask everybody live here, do you guys need Bravo therapy like I do because you're so addicted to it?
Yeah.
I know.
I do.
I'm telling you. I used to watch CNN. I'm not quite sure. Now I can't wait to turn on and watch by Bravo. But one comment, Bravo really has inspired me. Really, Bethany, you know, Bethany, she inspired me to make my own cocktail and couldn't pass up this plug. My new cocktail, Chaos on the Rocks, is being introduced here in Austin. Low calorie, low carb, chaos. Ooh, because it's the constant.
People don't like the plug.
What? No plug?
The plug.
People don't like the plug. They're not responding.
Oh, gosh, guys. Yeah. Okay, anyway, I just wanted you to know that Austin is not just all hat, no cattle. We are a substance. You should think of having a show here in Austin.
I think we just shot a big chunk of Top Chef here.
Yeah. That,
can we get a little
housewife show?
Schlepped our asses down here for this, too.
130 degrees all summer shooting in Texas.
We have one more question.
One more question.
All right, my question is, it will be quick, how important is a transmedia plan when pitching a reality show? Like, can it help sell the show? Is that what people are looking for now, or is the show just the show?
I think the show's the show, but I think it certainly couldn't hurt. If someone came and there was such a brilliant transmedia plan that had never been done that would really impact the show and is a guaranteed hook that people would go and watch it online or wherever, then I think it could absolutely help, but yes.
I don't see a separation between the show and the digital. To me, it's all content, Bravo content, so I hope we're going to even push it even further in that direction.
Yeah, I think it's about, like, not just the show, but how do you want to engage your fans? Like, you're having a conversation with them. What does that mean?
Okay, so it's not over, you guys. As a thank you for your time, my Watch What Happens Live TaskRabbit team has planned a surprise gift for each of you. All you have to do when you leave is go down the escalator, walk straight ahead, and exit to 4th Street on your left, okay? And you can claim your little gift from TaskRabbit and Watch What Happens Live. So thank you all so much. Dave, Tom, Amy, Lisa. Thanks, everybody.